leader had nothing then, but he's very, very comfortable. As the Jewish guy who had an accident, there's a guy who pushes his coat on me. He says, "Are you coming to this? Well, I make a living." So he's a very, 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 very successful, I think, financially also. But I wanted to give you this whole, first of all, America was very fascinating for me, starting with the cornflakes in the morning and the bananas on it and everything. She cooked so good, and it continues, the good food continued into my wife's existence. She cooked very good, she made very good apple strudel, and I cooked also, I think I made wonderful, even then I made wonderful chicken paprika, but she cooked most, and I was, there was something strange. She had some sort of a mysterious pain that she got at night, and the doctor came over and he gave an injection and it was better. Now this was developed at the time when I was supposed to be, I was, I worked first half a day and then a whole day, and at night I entered competitions and won almost every competition in this, and I was became immediately well known in, I mean, a year after I had been in America. I want to describe the closeness of this family, the suspicion of the family towards me, the prison-like enjoyment I had in the family of this uncle, who was an insurance salesman who sold me insurance on a completely wrong concept that I will get $5,000 after 20, which is not true, which is not, how do you call that? You get it only when you're dead. Completely, he said, you will need complete first $3,000, then $2,000. It's nothing, but anyway.
You were married at this time?
No, I'm talking about the time before, but I didn't know anything about America, except I didn't even know there was Coney Island very close to it. We lived on Avenue M and Ocean Parkway or whatever, Avenue M, but I didn't know because he didn't...
He didn't show you
anything? No, nothing. He had a scheme of how he wanted to get me a job. And I immediately, after a few days, I thought, it's absolutely nuts what he going to a pipe store and talking to the owner and ask him if he knows a job. So what I did, I looked through the telephone book, and this is how I started to know New York. I started to walk up every street from Broadway, left and right, 22nd Street, and ate at Niedek's, a Frankfurter, and a drink, and a wonderful food at home. And someday, once I found some money in my, so I said, who the hell is giving me money? So then I found out that the married, that the married daughter of his had fallen desperate in love. So I was very attractive and was very intelligent.
A cousin,
a distant cousin. So she slipped me this money, and then one day I found a letter that she'd written to me. And I'm very friendly now. They're both dead. The husband was killed in a Long Island train wreck, or he was committing suicide. We don't know. All of a sudden, it was, how many people get killed?
The husband of this daughter of your uncle.
Yes, so great, you know. And they had a son.
You want to continue? You were talking about this family.
No.
What would have been, did you want to say more about your relationship with her?
With him. With the boy who then became, studied law and we became very good friends when I came back to, during the army time, to Germany, and he came there too, and we worked on a book, which was very, it didn't work out with him, but then I worked with Sam Rosenberg on the book, and I wrote the book, Unfinished Sentence, and, but what I want to say is that we became very good friends, very deep friends, and he's a delightful person. First in Washington, every time I did the cover, we visited them when I was married to my second wife. But one day I was drafted. That was the end of my ending. I don't know if she continued to have her attacks. It maybe was from the cold, or it was psychosomatic. Oh, I don't know. It's mysterious. I asked her the other day, and she, believe it or not, she doesn't even remember. The most important thing, if you would say, I would say, didn't you have a head on your shoulders? I don't remember. It's fantastic how certain things are completely blacked out and completely, absolutely stories that she invents that has absolutely nothing to do with the truth. I hope I will never, ever, never do this. I always see you. Then I say to you, maybe I don't remember, it's all vague, and I don't want to think of it. But I would never make a statement, invent something that is so fantastic that has nothing to do with the truth.
When you went into the army, were you already aware that your marriage...
I was married. No. It was very happy. And then we went... I was with office of. I left my employment at Max Bauer Studio, mm-hmm. And because of my prize-winning thing, I got into the office of Warren Formation. That's where I met. This is the first important thing.
That's right.
That's where I met Ben Shahn and great painters.
You didn't exactly tell us about this prize. You said one year after you were in America.
Oh yes, I won. I won a prize, the first prize of the the National Cancer Poster Competition. And I used my wife as a model with her sword up. And it was refugee wins $1,000. In those days, it was a lot of money, $1,000. It was a sensation. All papers, refugee wins $1,000. So again, if my mother would have been so aware. At this place, the office of War Information, I met these great painters for the first time. I came in contact with Peter. And Ben Shahn said to me, "Why do you always stipper? You know, always a very cruel man." He really disliked me because he felt, even if I was nothing, he felt the competitiveness in me that he disliked intensely. And then he, again, which makes me proud, he was an Eastern Jew, he looked down on me. You understand? So we got even. So it was fine when he looked down in Vienna on the Eastern Jew. You understand? I won. If you beat my Jew, I beat you Jew, we said in Vienna. So he said, never said anything good. When he said, when I finally had arrived and had done marvelous painting, my parents' painting, when I came back, he said, he didn't say, "I liked your painting, my children like your paintings." So he always was evasive and always made some sort of secondhand remarks.
Who else did you meet in this experience? Who affected you?
Bernard Perlin, another Jew, and David Stone Martin, a Christian. Very nice guy, wonderful. And then the wife of Stuart Davis, I don't know if you know his name, he's very, very famous, very famous. And then I met all Reginald Marsh and Peter Bloom and all these people I met in the Office of War Information. Now then I was drafted, my wife had these attacks. One day I went to Coney Island, I saw, my God, the sea. My God, what did they keep for me? These wonderful
Oh my God, there's an ocean, my God. Whole world open for me. I never liked Manhattan. I never went into, I once went to music hall. I saw Jan Peer singing there. And I saw Frank Sinatra when he was thin and the girls, the face, all that swoon. It was very amazing. The whole apparition of America was so amazing. It was just overwhelming. I think anybody who comes from Europe, everything, every little detail is so different that it's absolutely amazing. Of course, for some people, it was not so, they're not so sensitive. It was nothing. So I got my draft notice. I left for Fort Belvoir. But before I left, I saw Washington to see an Office of Strategic Service when I was still be able to run around. And we had a wonderful vacation, my wife and I, at Martha's Vineyard. It was magnificent. That was really the end, the most marvelous thing. But there was always, we had some sort of argument. I don't know what the arguments, it's one thing you don't remember, your own arguments, what they were all about. But there is, the argument is a basic coming together of two people. You know, either the argument today, if the, you know, the argument is, in everything that is derogatory in my life, is an impetus or a spark for my inventions. You understand? My thorn that is buried in my family is the spark for ideas. You know, everything. I don't want to go into details. So I went through this basic training in Fort Belvoir to be trained as a combat engineer, and I met Lincoln Kirstein there, who is the owner of the store, department store in Boston, very very rich, and he's the maker of American Ballet Theater, very important. And later on, he became a very important person in my life of buying paintings for me. When I then came back and came into the gallery, the Midtown Gallery in New York. Then, all of a sudden, I tried to get into the office of work. We were on a bivouac in Shenandoah Valley, in the snow. It was, and all of a sudden, I got a note. Somebody ran up to my tent. Colonel, pack your stuff. You're moving out. And unconsciously, I knew what it was. And I took my tent apart, which hurt me terribly, because there was another guy with whom I was in the, you know, who shared the tent with, and of course I broke up his tent. He couldn't sleep that night, or I don't know what happened. But anyway, his name was Jewish, and he was a very, very nice guy, but not very strong. I remember we worked at a bridge in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock at night. And all of a sudden he started to cry and walked away and said, "Are you out of your mind to go away and say, and leave me here alone and tying those?" We were standing in the mud, it was cold, and we were tying together these stupid corrugated roads, you know. So I left and I was sent to Washington. Oh, before that, I was made, all foreigners were made American citizens. All of them were sworn in. They had to go, because I would have never gone through an examination in my life. Can you imagine? Again, I want to things were made possible for me. And then later on, I want to shoot forward. The mere fact that I was sent overseas.
Where you had just come from? From where?
Made it possible, and my argument with my wife became more and more murderous, and that she didn't want to pose, and the whole thing became, because she saw this looming, that this is not my life of comfort and being a successful commercial artist, but there's something in me that had no sense. That's what I said to you before, this first painting that I did, it was disturbing for her security. She said, "My God, why don't you paint those nice paintings you did before? Why do you paint those disturbing things? You did such nice paintings." This is a sentence she said. Why don't you paint those nice paintings you did? That's a lot of shit. I mean, she didn't understand that. I mean, and I didn't understand it either, because I didn't know what I'm going to be, but I knew that what I wanted, what I had, I didn't want. I knew that in the moment I left America with the Office of Strategic Service, I knew that I would not come back to my life, nor to my anything, to my wife, to nobody. Always this complete severance, you know, with everything you had done before. You know, always starting with completing. I went to a gigantic emotional and mental and spiritual upheaval. In about 2 months, I was in love with a girl desperately, with whom I worked in the Office of War Information. And through letters that I wrote to her, all of a sudden this tremendous power, like reborn, like, you know, like a guy who in the South who says, "God told me to be a preacher." I was a
spiritual rebirth.
A rebirth. People don't understand. With other words, from a normal person, an abnormal person started, you know. An absolutely abnormal. With other words, I was a normal citizen. I became an abnormal person. That was after I had done 3 paintings. I left America, and I left with this unit of 3 people of the I started to draw and paint in England. That was before the end of the war and bombs fell down. And because I started to draw also in the basic training, but I was too tired to do anything. And then later on, when I worked for the Office of War Information, then I had more peace, and I painted my parents' painting and two other paintings. And then, of course, I continued this investigation in London, and the veneer of our civilization was torn off by the bombs, and you saw, but it was still had some sense of humor. The English people were just absolutely great. They were magnificent. They were humorous. It wasn't a complete tragedy or tragedy, you know, which I then later found in Germany. But I was still married. I did not know that this is something, you know. I did not know until I had my show that it was something, because all of a sudden, my God, people acclaimed, "This is great. This is great." Time magazine, Life magazine, all magazines in Europe came to that first show.
London.
No, that was later on in Germany.
First show was in
Germany.
Berlin.
In Berlin, that's right.
What was the date for this first show?
It was in April 1947.
And how many pieces did you show there?
I don't really remember, maybe 25 paintings and maybe 50 drawings. It was a very, and each one of the paintings, you know, when you see an artist developing, you see what his early works, it was more, there's no such a thing. It was magnificent immediately. It was obvious, it was so magnificent when Sam Rosenberg came. First, this cousin of mine came, not cousin, the son of the cousin, mm-hmm. you know, from my great uncle, you know, the relative, came. He was very impressed. But then Sam Rosenberg all of a sudden came. See, you have always this connection with all these people. You never lose them. And he saw it and he said, oh my God, this is one of the greatest things. And that's what they said later on. It's the greatest thing that came out of the war. And the parents' painting was the most important painting. And that the skin of our teeth, which is owned by the Lincoln University in Nebraska, and then the Whitney Museum bought Vanity Fair, and the Museum of Modern Art bought the Rose Arbor, which is again shows how naive they are. They are absolutely not anything about it. I mean, they took the most unimportant. They could have had in their possession the best painting, the parents' painting. They could have had anything great, you know. No, they bought the Rose Arbor. And then Mr. Whitney bought the book Unfinished Sentence, which had the gouaches of the paintings and my writing in it. He owns that original. And it was some sort of, in those days, first of all, there were very few galleries. There were very few artists. If you compare them to now, where it has multiplied by the hundreds fold, I mean, it's just no comparison. And the prices were low. I mean, when I think that I might have sold the parents' painting for $900, $1,500, it's just incredible. But at that time, it was enough. With other words, I want to project forward. I was still married. Then one day, when I lived alone in Brooklyn, I got my divorce.
And when you
because
came
back? She wanted to see me once more, and I said, "I don't want to come back. This is it. I don't want to have anything to do with it."
So this is
we
after the army, you came back.
Great friends now. We visit them, and Joan is a good friend, and she's a good friend of mine, and she married this rich Jewish boy friend from Vienna, not the millionaire in the Kaufmann, whom I described with the father was in he had a business and so on. That's right. He married her. So he did not like her in Vienna. It's all so strange. Yes, no.
So you're still friends?
Very, very close.
You have any children?
No, I didn't have any children with her. And of course, there was first this animosity of who gets the insurance and all that stuff. But I think I paid some money, and that was all. And then I did not see her again. And I stayed in New York in a place. Again, strangely enough, this man from the Office of War of Strategic Service had an apartment. You remember, after the war, it was impossible to get a place to live in. So he got me this place in this walk-up, and the man who owned all these houses was interested in artists. He wanted to make something glamorous out of the place. So I moved in there and had this very strange, poor, but very interesting painted apartment with flowers growing up the heating system. It was with gray walls and one piece of furniture I still have. It's a painted peasant style. And I had lots of girlfriends in Germany. Why do I always talk about it? Because the girls, I need to pose, you understand, in the nude. And to come back to Germany, I was in complete command. When I then came from London, where I slowly started my vocabulary of working and drawing, and then I came to Berlin, where we were stationed. First we came to Wiesbaden, then to Germany, then I came back to the Nuremberg trial, and I saw Göring and made drawings of Göring and Hess and all the war criminals. It was glorious. The only thing was I had a sickness picked up from a girl, not a venereal disease, but a skin disease. It's called scabies. You know, scabies. And I didn't get sick from the scabies, but they gave me a medicine, and I was allergic to this benzobenzoid. And I remember, I just almost crawled up the walls. It was so itching. It was so itching, I just screamed. So finally it took me
How long were you in Berlin after the war? For how many years?
2 years, believe it or not. And at the end of the 2 years, I went to Vienna, and I said, very sad, what is it?
Just the idea of going back.
Oh, that was absolutely one of the most traumatic experiences of my whole life. Everything is traumatic and dramatic.
That
was absolutely incredible to come back and to sit in the Vienna woods and to think about my parents. I took two sticks and I wanted to make a grave for them. You know, stupid. You know, I wanted to make a mark or something for them.
Little did I know
then when I was sitting there that a few months later I will paint
the
parents' painting, which is an eternal
memorial.
You should be my secretary. I will pay you nothing. A memorial to them.
All from memory. You brought no photographs.
No. Oh, yes. Okay. Now I use their photographs over and over again in my paintings. But at that time, I had two Germans, and that brings me back to my having cigarettes, liquor, chocolates to have the control over all these hundreds of people. There was not one person who would not pose or do anything that I would want them to do. Because I had complete control, like a king again, you know, this difference, you know. When I came to Vienna, it was, first of all, we did not land in Vienna with the airplane. We landed in Tulln, and then from Tulln, which is outside Vienna, we drove in with a car. And it was absolutely overwhelming how this whole city looked like on a destroyed Sunday. There was nothing, it was just sleeping, no windows, bridges were in the water. But the most amazing thing, there was no windows. Everything was broken. Shrapnels in the ground. Tanks everywhere. Pieces of airplanes in bomb holes. I was used to it because I was living. I lived in a town that was 1,000 times more destroyed than Vienna, which was Berlin. You have never seen anybody who has been a soldier in the war knows that this was his greatest experience of his life, of having all these women, being in control of a nation that is where he is the god, you understand?
So abnormal. There was no other time in which he could experience the same thing. Right.
That's it. And they didn't do it because they did it out of love. They needed, the women needed the love. They all of a sudden, their husbands were dead or gone, and they were desperately for love and for affection. They didn't do it because of the chocolate. Unfortunately, but there were not so many men. But we did have men also working in the studio. So this is how I built my paintings, with posing the people and having, just to tell you what you asked me, having an old man and old woman posing from the back for the parents' painting. Then later on, I don't know where I got this photograph. I think I had. And then another thing is, this old wife of mine has photographs that I didn't even know that she has, of my father and mother and my brother. It's unbelievable that she gave to me now, very reluctantly. But at that time, I painted all this these famous paintings like Playing Pretend or it was most gigantic sensation because the people were hungry for art. They came by the thousands of questionnaires and newspaper came. It was a sense, it was one of the greatest sensations, of course, of my life, but it was of the greatest sensation in Europe.
The time when you were painting.
I think it was my greatest sensation of my whole life because there was never a repetition of the excitement of all of a sudden being born as a painter, but still I didn't believe it. Mm-hmm. Still all that sensation, but you just don't believe it. And then when I came back in the spring to America, or maybe it was summer, I don't know, I very soon found a gallery, the Midtown Gallery. This man immediately saw my paintings, and he was, strange enough, I was directed to him as a person who would be sympathetic to my painting. He was, and I stayed with him for about 10 years on 57th Street, the Midtown Gallery. And he took me up like a son, very, very, very warm and very...